Hello, and welcome to the Mail Report on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayo.
And I'm Bob Retall.
In this episode, we'll be discussing the top 300 comics sold through Diamond to retailers for the month. The numbers we're going to be talking about in this episode are the top 300 comics as sold through Diamond to retailers for February 2010. And not a big surprise, Bob, Marvel took the top slot on the breakdown of the top 300.
That's true, but interestingly, you know, Blackest Night continues to steamroll across as the number one book, Siege taking up second place. But Marvel has the hearts and minds and the overall numbers, so, you know.
Yeah, well, I'm not surprised Blackest Night continues on top. I mean, Siege is more of a compartmentalized crossover, whereas Blackest Night takes the whole thing. And I think DC did a better job building up to Blackest Night in the Green Lantern titles and stuff like that, whereas Siege almost came out of the blue. You know, it's like, well, let's do another one. And their solicitation for that was essentially, finally it ends. Which I'm like, thank God. So it's interesting, though, because typically when Marvel has a really strong event or whatever, you know, they dominate even more than they do or whatever normally. But even with DC doing very well with Blackest Night and, you know, the crossovers and whatnot, I mean, Marvel had 48.55% of the total units for the top 300. 50.35% of the dollars for those units, and DC had 35.76% of the total units for the top 300, and 34.21% of the dollars. So, I mean, there's a 13-point, you know, spread between them on the units, and a, you know, 16-point spread on the dollars. So it's a noticeable margin that Marvel's ahead by. Now, Marvel also published 104 items versus the 79 that DC did. Now, there were 7 reorders for Marvel, 3 for DC. So, 79 new items for Marvel and 97 for Marvel and 76 for DC. So, you toss another 21 items on there for Marvel, and that's certainly going to give them an advantage in terms of numbers.
Sure, because, I mean, DC, they do good in the top. Right, I mean, they have 6 of the top 10 and 11 of the top 20.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, Marvel puts out more stuff, and it's like a wave. It, you know, it's like overwhelms, you know, at the end of the day, what DC does.
Well, it's interesting because for the longest time, Marvel was both putting out more and doing better at the top. So the fact that DC's, you know, competing better at the top of the charts, I think, is a really good sign.
It is. It is showing the strength of their storytelling and, you know, how much the fans are responding to that storytelling, because they're coming out in very solid numbers, Marvel compared to DC, at the top of the charts.
Yeah. One other quick thing on the breakdown. We've got IDW having taken 2.31% of the units and 2.65% of the dollars. Just for comparison, Dark Horse did 2.92% of the units and 2.65% of the dollars. Image did 3.09% of the units and 2.86% of the dollars. So IDW, which is moving into the premier status with the next previews, is really kind of close to where Dark Horse and Image are. You know, right on the heels of that is Dynamite with 2.21% of the units and 2.14% of the dollars, and Boom with 2.04% of the units and 2.06% of the dollars. And really, after that, you get to below 0.6% by either dollars or units for any other publisher. So it's going to be interesting to see in about 3 months' time how IDW moving to the front of the catalog, you know, impacts these numbers, if it does at all. And there's a good chance it may not do it at all, because it's not changing their discount level. And, I mean, let's face it, most retailers know about IDW and, you know, what it offers. So there's, like I said, a good chance it may not shift those sales figures much at all. But, you know, who knows? If it does, I expect Dynamite and Boom to say, hey, we want to be in the front half too.
Yeah, and then, you know, with those mid-tier publishers, it has a lot to do with the size and diversity of their line. You know, it's like you look at Marvel and DC, and they just put out so many books. But, you know, Image, Dark Horse, IDW, Dynamite, Boom, they all have a decent-sized line of books that's got some pretty good diversity about it. And that's what helps them get up in that 2% range, just because, you know, they're putting out a certain quantity of books. When you drop off from there, I think the publishers after that have significantly smaller offerings in any given month that people have to pick from.
Right. Well, it's interesting because you look at Marvel and DC this month, and Marvel is 48.55% of the units. Now, supposing you're a retailer that follows this exactly, and let's face it, there probably isn't any retailer that does that. But in theory, you could account for nearly half of your sales just by going to the Marvel previews for that month. Okay, so it's definitely worth your time to go through that. You can get another 35.76% of your sales by going through the however many pages it is to for the DC section of previews. That gives you 84.31% of your sales. Now, if you finish what's currently in the front half, that would be Image and Dark Horse, you've accounted for 90% of your sales. So already there's a question of how much of your time is it worth to go through that back half, which is going to account for, say, 10% or less of your sales. Now, add in IDW, you're up to 92.63% of your sales accounted for. Is it worth your time to go through that couple hundred pages, 200 pages, whatever, for the last, you know, 7.5%? Now, if you decide, hey, let's do Dynamite, let's do Boom, you've accounted for 96.88% of your sales. And then it's really questionable if it's worth flipping through all those pages for a little over 3% of your sales. I mean, at which point you're basically going to go through your pull list and say, well, I know my customers want X, Y, and Z. Let me order X, Y, and Z and kind of ignore the rest, because it's unlikely to justify the time it would take to go find the other stuff. And that's a really, really bad position for the market to be in.
And, you know, what I think it really comes down to is it worth the time to proactively go about it? Whereas I think most retailers, if somebody comes to them, you know, if it's a customer who's a regular customer of a shop, if they come to them and say, hey, I really want book X that's, you know, somewhere, whether it's, and these are all great books, you know, whether it's Terry Moore's Echo or, you know, something from, you know, like PS238, you know, or any of the other ones where it's like a book that's like pretty much the sole production of that publisher. I mean, they're not going to be popping up, you know, as a premier publisher because, you know, they're doing one thing. But most shops, if you tell them that you want to collect this book, they're going to order it for you. And if they know that there's three or four people, they might order an extra couple of copies for the stands just because they know that there's an interest in that book. That's why it's so important for people to go to their shop and tell them, you know, I really am interested in X, because that's going to help the diversity of the shelves. When you're at any comic shop, I think once you get past the larger publishers, the diversity you see on the racks is going to be primarily driven by the demand of the customer base of that particular shop.
Exactly. Because, again, it's not worth the time for the retailer who's got a lot of stuff to be doing to go flip page by page, look at every individual item and say, gosh, what is this? Does it look any good? What's the discount on it? How well do I think that'll sell? And make all of those kinds of assessments and decisions for what may amount to maybe a couple of percent of his overall sales. Whereas, again, if he goes through his pull lists and say, well, I've been asked for X, Y, and Z, you know, Terry Moore's Echo, Aladdin from Radical, Atomic Robo from Red 5, or whatever the items might be, put those down and call it a day. So I completely agree that, you know, everybody who's you know, who's listening and stuff, who's interested in any particular title, be it from Marvel, DC, or a smaller publisher, let your retailer know. It makes their job easier. They can order what you want. They'll have it when it comes out so you can buy it. And it's a win for everybody. It's a win for the reader because they get the books they want. It's a win for the retailer because they're able to order more accurately and therefore have a more efficient operation and better cash flow. It's a win for the publisher because they sell the stuff. It's a win for the creator because, again, their stuff gets bought and read and they get paid. I'm always surprised when I see a store that does not do a pre-order service at all. It doesn't make sense to me.
Yeah, and, you know, that's, you know, for me, especially if I'm going to a shop that, you know, if I'm a regular customer shop, I would never be a regular customer shop without a pull list that doesn't offer a pull list service, because that's going to just really cut down on your ability to get a lot of the indie books that I like, because, you know, if you're just relying on being able to pluck it off the rack, not only do you have to now count on the shop ordering something from the back half of previews that you didn't ask for, but if you don't show up at, you know, 12 o'clock on Wednesday when they open, or whatever time they open on Wednesday, you know, you have to then count on, like, well, the two copies that they maybe ordered, you know, didn't get bought by somebody else by the time I make it into the shop, you know? And well, that's, you know, I just...
I'll take it a step further. I mean, there's a store here in town, Austin Books, that is a big store and orders a lot of independent stuff and frequently has stuff on the rack, okay? So there's a good chance I could get there on a Wednesday evening and they'd still have all the stuff I'd want. But it would be scattered all over the store. You know, there'd be the dozen, two or three or four dozen titles I'd want for that week, so I'd have to go wander around, find them, you know, all that kind of stuff. Now, no doubt if I did that every week, I'd finally understand their you know, genre racking system to some degree. But just the hassle of that, the fact, again, they don't have them in one spot, I might miss something just because I simply couldn't find it, and things like that would just drive me nuts. And that's, you know, again, assuming that they did order it and they did have it on the shelf, which, again, like you said, is a big, big gamble, particularly for some of the small, more fringe stuff. It just seems like every store would benefit from this kind of a thing, particularly if they've got a point-of-sale system that tracks their pull lists as well. Because, you know, a store could do a cycle sheet and say, okay, I've sold X copies of this for 3 months, and think they've got a steady supply of, or demand of X for that item. But the question is it the same X people, or is it, you know, X minus 5, and that 5 sales are just coming and going every month, and it just balances out, but you've got a very transient nature for that 5 sales versus a, you know, solid base for the rest. As a retailer, I would want to know that. All right, let's take a look at the actual comics themselves. As you said, Blackest Night number 7 topped the charts. It did 130,613 estimated units, which is really good sales. And I believe if we looked down at the bottom, we might see some reorder activity for that previous issue, I think we saw that last month. Because when it first hit the charts for number 6, it seemed a little low, like closer to the 100,000 mark, but it ended up totaling to 135,978 units. So this is the lowest this title has sold so far, with that previous issue being the next lowest, and 5 getting the bump from the power ring. But really, the level of attrition on this is not too bad. It's a couple of percent or whatever. But, you know, the fact it started at 206,000 aggregated sales for that first issue by now, and is still doing over 130,000, this is very successful for DC. Siege, on the other hand, its second issue is in rank 2 with 108,429 units. It's interesting because that's off by maybe 58 units from the previous issue, making it a drop of 0.05%, which I find very interesting because it indicates to me that retailers are expecting people who are getting Siege are getting Siege, and they're not really expecting much drop-off. Either that, or possibly we had some massive reorder activity on Siege down at the bottom of the list, which I'm scanning for and not seeing. But I would have expected a bit more of a drop-off between the first and second issue. Rank 3, we've got Green Lantern 51. It did 95,509 units. That's a drop of almost 11,000, or about a 10.28% drop. But the previous issue, both was a dollar more. It was that 50th issue, so they made a bit of a big deal about it. I do find it interesting that this is selling 35,000 units less than Blackest Night, because I think Green Lantern and Green Lantern Corps are fairly integral to the big story. And, you know, clearly not everyone's picking those up.
You know, again, it's really interesting to me that, and I mentioned this before, but, you know, you look at the top of the charts here, and, you know, six of the first of the top 10 are DC. And then they have five books in 10 through 20. But in 21, or 11 through 20, rather. But then in 21 through 30, they've only got one book. So there's a big drop-off there after the top 20 for DC.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's where Marvel makes up a lot of ground.
Oh, yeah.
In that space there.
Because they've got a lot of what I would kind of consider that mid-tier of titles, which DC used to be stronger in, but was getting blown out of the top spot. I mean, you've got those that are doing kind of the 60, 70,000 or above, which isn't that big. You've got kind of that 60 to 40 or so thousand or whatever mid-tier stuff. And then you've got, you know, a little below that until you get to like the 20,000 and below, which are kind of the low sellers. And, I mean, Marvel's just putting out a lot of things. And some of them don't have to do great, but if you've got Deadpool, Merc with a Mouth doing around 35,000, Deadpool with two issues doing around 43, 44,000, you know, that right there kind of adds up.
Yeah, well, that right there is, you know, more sales. You know, it's like it's equivalent, or it's actually right around Blackest Night, you know. Not exactly up there, but, you know, it's close, you know.
Yeah, it's 122,000, but it's within the ballpark, yeah. So, and I'm not sure if there are other Deadpool, well, you add in the Deadpool team-up down below, that puts it to 152,000. So, sure, that's split across four titles. It cost a bit more for Marvel to put those sales together, but I think that's part of why Marvel is going with the route it's doing of, okay, we were doing all right with Hulk, let's do five different Hulk titles. We're, you know, there seems to be some popularity of Deadpool right now. Let's flood the market with that. And it may be cannibalizing their sales of other titles and stuff, you know, but it's without point of sales information, we really can't make it that determination or not. You know, we don't know if having four Deadpool titles a month are selling more or less than the one, because, you know, are they going to different people? Are they going to the same, which probably they are?
Well, I think it's a wise move on their part, because, you know, if they only had one Deadpool title, it's not going to be selling 130,000 copies. It's just, that's not going to happen, you know. But by putting out a whole bunch of them, they've got enough people who like the character that they can get aggregate sales like that.
True, but where do you cross that line? Are you better off with one Justice Society title, or Justice Society, JLA All-Stars, Blackest Night, JSA, and an annual in a given month, you know? And it says something when they keep throwing out more and more titles, because yes, I agree that obviously Deadpool's not going to be selling the 100, you know, 1,000 plus or whatever. Neither is JSA, whereas if you aggregate the sales across those titles, I mean, it's doing better for them. But how much is too much? How much? At what point do you get where the reader says, I can't afford all of these, therefore I'll get none of them?
Well, I don't know. I mean, it seems to be very popular, because let's run it down, right? I mean, you got the Green Lantern franchise, right? You got mm-hmm. Green Lantern and Green Lantern Corps, and, you know, a lot of the Blackest Night stuff is kind of a spin-out of the Green Lantern family of titles. You got Batman, and there's certainly a lot of Batman family titles. You got a lot of Superman family titles, you know, over at Marvel, you got the Hulk franchise, the Avengers franchise, the X-Men franchise, you know, kind of a mini franchise built around Deadpool. You know, it's just, I think that that must be working for them, you know, because they've got their marketing departments. And, you know, I've got to believe that Marvel and DC are smart enough to, you know, figure out, you know, if we do it this way, we're making more money for ourselves. And for, I don't say it works for everything, but I think for certain, you know, top franchises, it seems like it's certainly a winning strategy for them.
Well, I guess it comes down to how do you define working and winning? Because are they making more money? Yes. You know, if you've got one thing that's selling 40,000, 45,000, you split it to two and they both sell 30, yeah, you're coming out ahead in terms of raw numbers. But at what point, I mean, you would think with all these Avenger titles coming out, all these Superman titles coming out, that they would serve to retain the interest in the property, reinforce the sales of each other to a degree, and that we wouldn't keep seeing all the drop-offs that we do. This is another month where, you know, we've got 191 items that sold less than the previous issue and only 33 that sold more, with 12 items being reorders and 64 having no previous issue my system could find. So, you know, when two-thirds of the list is losing sales and, you know, maybe 10 or 11% is going up, and in a lot of those cases you could probably chalk it up to either a minor increase or a clear gimmick of some sort, I question if these tactics really are working or not. But it comes down to, are you looking at the aggregate? Are you looking at the individual titles? Where should you be looking and what really matters? Certainly the aggregate is a big deal. You know, you need to be making money. But, you know, when I see Fantastic Four down at 37,526 estimated units during what I would consider a really, really strong creative team and some really cool stories, I question if the way they're either promoting it or whatever is really working.
Oh, fair enough, fair enough. But, you know, I think that they're maybe not taking that same long-term, you know, thought on this, you know.
Well,
I have to wonder if...
You got to be successful in the short term to be around to worry about the long term, I guess. So there's something to be said for that, too.
Yeah, well, you're right.
It'll be interesting to see, like with the Avengers titles, which they're about to retool and relaunch, because Dark Avengers is at rank 6 with 76,639 sales. New Avengers at rank 7 with 76,405 sales. Where else are the Avengers hiding? They are... Initiative is down at rank 36 with 39,968 units. And where's Mighty Avengers? Did it not ship this month? It must not have, because it would have been higher. It would have been within that area. Of course, that's part of it, too. You know, you don't ship something in a given month, can't sell it. But clearly Avengers Initiative was seen as kind of the peripheral title that's not as important and, frankly, technically doesn't really star the Avengers. Not that Dark Avengers does either, but to me, it indicates there's around 76,500 or so, you know, Avengers fans. So, will the relaunched titles do significantly better initially? Certainly. Will they do better long term? Don't know.
But, you know, again, you know, when all else fails, reboot the franchise and you'll get that momentary pop.
Well, I mean, that's what they're going to do with Green Arrow. And if you look at rank 35, we've got the Black Lantern Green Arrow issue that did 42,000, which, of course, Blackest Night crossover, that's going to be a lot of it. But, I mean, that's been selling closer to the 17, 18,000 mark. And, yes, they'll reboot it. The first couple issues will do much better, but I expect it'll quickly gravitate back down to there. You know, we've seen cases in the past where I've compared the sales of, I think it was Doom Patrol, which was right around when it had three or four different runs by three or four different creators with three or four different takes, and pretty much they all gravitated down to about the same point. I think some titles have just a level they're going to reach in this market. And unless you do something to build up the readership you know, you're going to have a hard time with that.
Right.
You know, again, Green Lantern, or not Green Lantern, Green Arrow and some of these others that are fringe Justice Leaguers that can't quite support their own book, if they were to do, like I've suggested a number of times, do a weekly JLA series with these guys, you'd get the people who are interested in Green Arrow, but not so much in Blue Beetle or Firestorm, but are for the Hawks or whoever, into that title and exposed to these other characters. Whereas it doesn't really matter what you do in a Green Arrow book, shy of relaunching it, and sometimes not even then, to get people who aren't Green Arrow readers to try the book out. And that's where I don't think they're using their team titles as successfully as maybe they could.
Right.
Rank 28, we've got Buffy the Vampire Slayer Season 8. It's down to 47,975 units. And this is one where, you know, 28 issues in, you lose a thousand or two sales a month. It adds up. Because this one started at, the first issue's gone to aggregated sales of 158,397 units and stayed above 100,000 until issue 8, and, you know, it's just been kind of going down ever since. And it's good stuff, but again, if you can't keep readers from issue to issue, it catches up to you sooner or later.
That's true.
Okay, by the time we hit rank 58, we've dropped below 30,000 units. I mean, we're clearly in the sales of the titles are worth doing, but they're not bringing in money hand over fist, but they're at least justifying their existence. This is where we've got Action Comics, JSA All-Stars, Batgirl, Gotham City Sirens, Batman Streets of Gotham. Wonder Woman's down at 25,354 units. It's lower than Spider-Woman. That kind of surprises me. Titans, which is about to get retooled and kind of sort of relaunched, is down around 24,489 units.
Now what exactly? Because you got Teen Titans and Titans. Are they going to keep both those titles around?
Yes.
Kind of like lost track of that franchise.
What they seem to be doing is keeping Teen Titans more or less as it is. Titan seems to be taking hiatus for a month or two. They're doing that Deathstroke one-shot, and it's possible he may be doing his own team of Titans. Or at the very least, they're restructuring that the Titans proper. Because, of course, all of those members have more or less become Justice Leaguers.
Right, right. That's why I was wondering, you know, because, you know, it just seems like they shifted over into JLA, and I haven't been watching the news, but I did see on the solicits that, you know, we didn't have the Titans title.
Well, and the last couple have been Aftermath of Blackest Night for Donna Troy, some of the stuff around kind of a recap of Red Arrow's history and whatnot, and just how things have changed for that group of characters. And they've done some interesting issues, some good stuff, but it did have sort of a marking time feeling to it. So they need to get this title kind of back on track or just get rid of it.
Right.
Conceivably, if they did, that might help Teen Titans, because people who want their Titans fixed would say, well, maybe I should just get that one. Flip side, it might not help it at all. What else do we have in this kind of mid-tier section? We got quite a bit from Marvel. Web of Spider-Man, Punisher, Nova, Guardians of the Galaxy, Ms. Marvel, Incredible Hercules.
You got a rise of 300 units on one of your favorite titles, the track Walking Dead, here at rank 77. One of the rare ones that didn't go down.
But that's one where you gotta look a little further than just the last issue. Because it's up 300 from the last issue, but still down about 300 from the one before that. This is one that seems to have pretty much leveled off right around the 23,000 to 24,000 mark. And it has not really broken above that since issue 50, where it did 27,683 units. Everything else prior to that was pretty much around the 22,000-23,000 mark, with a little above 23,000. Since issue 50, it's pretty much consistently done above 23,000, with the exception of issue 58. Broken above 24,000 a few times, with the high watermark seeming to be issue 66 with the 24,923 units. So, obviously still very successful for Kirkman, but one of those that, while it did seem to be continuing to climb, doesn't seem to be continuing to do that at this point.
But at least it's not in the continual slide. If it's bouncing up and down, it's not, you know, continuing to be lower and lower every single issue like you see
right,
in a lot of times.
Right. No, to me, this is a fairly stable one. Yeah, it's got a swing of about 1,000 or whatever, maybe. But frankly, I'd be very happy with these sales as a publisher, be it at you know, Image, DC, Marvel, wherever, because it's fairly reliable sales from month to month. And it shows he's able to keep readers. Now, the question is, how much of this is churn? How much of this is just retailers tuning their orders, you know, or what? But, you know, he's doing a decent job there. Now, flip side, you look at Haunt, a couple of ranks down at rank 83. Started above 50,000 with 50,036 units. Second issue went to 28,245 units. Got an ever so slight bump on that third issue of 28,388 units, which actually is not a bad sign. To level out at that point is usually a good sign. But then at issue 4, it went down to 26,421 units, and then with issue 5, to 22,454 units. So it lost half its sales already, but the attrition level is slowed quite a bit. You know, again, the leveling off at 2 and 3, some adjustments down at 4 and 5. This could easily level off, you know, within the next 6 issues. But, you know, we'll see if that happens or not. Now we got another cluster of DC titles at ranks 87 through 89, of Outsiders, Booster Gold, and Power Girl, all doing around 21,000 units, which is viable, but not stellar sales. It used to be, at this level, it would be under consideration for cancellation. But really, at that point, you know, you go to rank 100, and that's where we have Green Arrow, Black Canary. Now, remember we said that Blackest Night, Green Arrow did 42,014 units. The previous issue did 16,600. So, not really surprised that they're retooling this title. And I do think going for a Green Arrow title and a Birds of Prey title is probably a very smart move. But I wonder how long something like Doom Patrol is going to stick around at 15,689 units. But flip side, we've got lower titles at DC that are still around. So, now one thing that did surprise me is they have announced already with the new solicits that the Shield and the Web are ending. And those are both ending at issue 10. I'm surprised by that only in so much as they had announced what the backup feature was going to be with issue 11 for one of them. It might have been the Shield.
Yeah, I remember you saying about that. It's like, well, there you go. It's not going to make it.
But, you know, with issue 6 of the Shield doing 6,010 units and issue 6 of the Web doing 5,276 units, it's just not worth their time. You know, it's got to be costing them more to produce that than is worth to do. And if you can put those creators on something else, good chance that something else is going to sell better. Now, likewise, if you look at rank 197, you've got Astounding Wolfman 21 doing 6,565 estimated units. That's not bad for an Image title. That's not even bad for a Kirkman title necessarily, but Kirkman's probably feeling he could be doing something that's going to sell a bit better than that. And he's quite possibly right.
I'm kind of, you know, just on total speculation mode here, but I'm waiting for Kirkman to give in to the temptation to create some kind of spin-off title from Walking Dead. You know, whether it's, you know, the group splits up and they do a mini-series or something with, you know, part of the group off on something else, or, you know, just looking at a different view of the world or something. Because, I mean, that is his main bread and butter kind of title, and it has good sales. And you would think that if he was just in it for the buck, which I don't necessarily think he is, but, I mean, that would be a no-brainer.
He's doing essentially a spinoff of Invincible, of Guardians of the Globe, or whatever that superhero team is.
Right.
They've done a bunch of ads along the lines of the Avengers ads we've been seeing lately. But I think, I really think if he does that with Walking Dead, that would be a mistake. Because the self-contained nature of it, I think, is in its favor. And it would just reek of cashing in. You know, cashing out or cashing in. You know what I mean?
Yep.
But I could definitely see where the temptation would be there. The question is, could he find an interesting enough hook to where it's not just a different group of people? And even if he did, could he get both out on a regular basis? Because he's got issues with getting stuff out on time. You know, he needs to work on that. The issue of Astounding Wolfman was 3 weeks late, and that's not too bad for that title. Although I think he may have solicited that one a few times. Because it was originally supposed to ship on November 25th. So, you know, he resolicited that one twice. I'd have to double check that, though. What else do we got that looks interesting? We got the Star Trek movie adaption from IDW. First issue of that did 6,436 units. They've done a lot of good stuff with Star Trek, a lot tied into the current, the new movie. But the sales on that still are fairly under the radar in terms of what I would imagine is the totality of Star Trek fans out there.
And it is interesting. I mean, it's like, you know, IDW, they're a premier publisher now, but their best-selling book, G.I. Joe Origins, is at slot 125, right? So they got 125 and 126 with a G.I. Joe and a Transformers book. Then they go G.I. Joe, Angel, another G.I. Joe, Transformers, Angel, Doctor Who, and that the Star Trek one, you know, that's down at rank 200 from them. It's also, you know, it's like their first original thing that's not a licensed property is The Lock and Key down at 263.
Yeah.
You know, so IDW is really riding it on the... I don't want that to come off as negative as that maybe sounds, but I mean their primary focus is on the licensed properties. So maintaining those licenses is key to that company's strategy.
But if they can maintain those licenses and use those to allow them to do the Lock and Keys and the other original stuff, I'm okay with that. I think that's a good move. And I do think it's smart that, you know, they've got I think G.I. Joe and Transformers are both Hasbro licenses. Angel is obviously from Fox. Doctor Who, probably from BBC. Star Trek from Paramount. Ghostbusters, I'm not sure. But they've at least got licenses from enough different places that they're not as at risk as, say, Devil's Due was when they lost the G.I. Joe Transformer licenses.
Right.
But you're right. The only things they have above 10,000 units are G.I. Joe, Transformers, and Angel. And Angel... You know, they had changed the creative team to Bill Willingham, and that really does not seem to have caught on. Now, I'm thinking something's not quite up right with these sales figures maybe on issue 30, because these are almost, it's 11,044 units, whereas the previous issue did 20,281 units. Now, given the timing of things, 28 was the first one with the new creative team. This could be an adjustment based on that, but if so, that's harsh. I've got to wonder if some of this, for whatever reason, split between February and March, and we'll see another 9,000-10,000 units for Angel 30 next month. That's a big enough drop that it just doesn't look right. But, I mean, it's one of those things. I mean, people know G.I. Joe comics are coming out. They know Transformers are coming out. They know Angel's coming out. I don't see how IDW moving to Premier Publisher would really boost these sales much at all.
Well, you have a point there, because it's the licensed properties. I think those sell relatively decent, and I mean, as such things go, right? But they have that name recognition, and a shop's going to either find them or not, regardless of whether they're in the front of the catalog. I would hope, maybe I'm wrong, but I would hope that just moving them to the front of the catalog isn't going to, you know, cause like a whole bunch of retailers say, oh, gee, I didn't even know that there was such a thing as G.I. Joe Transformer comics. You know, that would It would be pretty sad if a retailer is out there that was totally oblivious to the fact that those things were being published because they weren't in the front of the catalog.
Well, I mean, IDW's got a 14-page section in the back of the current previews, and if all that happens is those 14 pages move to, I guess, right before Image or something, yes, it gives them better visibility, but it's not like they were that hard. I mean, they weren't that easy to miss in the back half if you actually flip through it. And again, these are the sort of things I would have expected people to say, hey, I like Star Trek, get me this thing, if the readers knew about it. But I guess the question is, how many readers are either going through previews, hitting Newsarama, comic book resources, or those kinds of sites, finding out about these things, and then requesting them from their retailer? Or are they just going to the store and looking at what's on the rack? I don't know what the average comic reader does. I would suspect a lot of them are just what's on the rack this week.
Right.
Okay, going down towards the bottom of the list, we've got final issue of Phonograms 2 Singles Club, rank 283. It did 2,573 units. That's down maybe 133 from the previous, which isn't too bad. We've got Atomic Robo, Revenge of the Vampire Dimension, at rank 249. It did 4,372 units, which really is within arm's reach of the web, which DC's canceling. I find that kind of... Uncle Scrooge. We've got issue 388 here. It's doing 4,311 units, which is showing some drop-off from when Boom took it over with issue 384, where it was at 5,830 units. It lost 600 with the next issue going to 5,230 units. Lost another 300 units going down to 4,946 units. With 387, it was down to 4,604 units, and then now to 4,311 units. So it seems to be losing about 300 an issue, which is interesting. I mean, that's not a major drop-off. Percentage-wise, it seems a little big just because of the level at what this is selling. But hopefully this will level off and do pretty well for Boom. A lot of the Boom titles are in this area. We've got Donald Duck and Friends, Die Hard, Walt Disney Comics and Stories, Muppet King Arthur, Cars, Disney Hero Squad, Farscape, Dargo's Quest, Toy Story, Muppet Show, Wizards of Mickey. So that's kind of where a lot of their titles seem to be grouping. And then if we go a little higher up, we've got their bestseller, which is, of course, Irredeemable, which is doing 12,912 estimated units, with Incorruptible not that far behind with 11,860 units. Those are very much becoming the kind of the anchor books or whatever for that publisher. Which, I mean, they're Mark Waid. It's not bad. Didn't make sense and stuff. Not a problem. So it's nice to see the original material from the publisher kind of outdoing a lot of their licensed stuff.
Yeah, it is interesting, though, that like the anchor books, and it has a lot to do with, you know, we've talked about the licensed properties, you know, being really, really solid sellers. I was in a comic shop in Kansas City this past week, and they actually had their shop set up in the way that we've talked about before, where when I walked in and I complimented the owner on it, when you walked in, the first thing you see at the very front of the shop was a lot of the indie books and the licensed properties. And they had the IDW, they had the G.I. Joe and Transformers. And he had the other IDW books with them too. He had like Lock and Key, you know, there. But, you know, and then he had the Buffy and the, you know, the Angel and the Star Trek and Star Wars. That stuff was all at the front of the shop. And then the Marvel and DC was at the back of the shop. And it was the same thing we talked about, because I talked to him a little bit about it. And he's like, yeah, you know, people who want the Marvel and DC, they're going to find it, you know? So very smart. And I asked him, you know, does it help your sale on these? It's working good for him. So that's probably the first time I've actually walked into a shop and I've seen it that market. And I think it is a smart idea.
I think it's a very smart idea because the smaller publishers, the licensed properties, I mean, there's a lot of untapped potential sales in this area. You know, there's no reason Incorruptible and Irredeemable couldn't be selling 50, 60,000. There's no reason the Star Trek books couldn't be selling 3, 4, 5, 6 times what they're selling. It's a matter of letting people know the material's out there. And just finding a better way to again, put it in front of the people who would like to buy that stuff. You know, and that's why I kind of sort of conceptually understand the genre racking they do over at Austin Books or whatever, but, you know, I went over there looking for a Star Wars title. And was that going to be under sci-fi? It wasn't under sci-fi. It wasn't under licensed property or whatever. There were 2 or 3 places it could have been, and I couldn't find it in any of them. Finally had to ask, and that person, I think, had to ask somebody else. And it's like, you know, if I know what publisher it is, that should be all I need other than the name of the book.
Right. Oh, and by the way, if anybody wants to check out that store, it's actually in Overland Park, Kansas, which is just not, it's right next door to Kansas City, but it's called Pop Culture Comics, and it's on West 87th Street. But it's a nice shop. They got a really nice selection of books. And again, kudos to them on putting the indie stuff up at the front. Smart business idea.
Cool. Okay, we've got 130 items on the list this month at the $299 price point, 125 at the $399 price point. That, of course, accounts for 85% of the list. We had 2 items at $1, 9 items at $250, 19 items at $350, 2 at $395, 1 at $495, 6 at $499, 5 at $599, and 1 at $10. The heck was that $10 one? That was the X-Men Second Coming Prepare.
So one of those bundles of freebies, or things that are theoretically supposed to be given out free at the shop, right?
I believe so. I don't have a solicitation blurb on it, but yes, most likely. I'm fairly certain that's exactly what that is. Again, it's like one of their saga things or whatever. That's $10 net. They probably got at least 25 copies for that, probably more. But it does look like the $299 price point is still holding strong. The $399, obviously, we're going to see a lot of that at the smaller publishers, the IDWs, the Booms, the Image and stuff like that. But as far as Marvel and DC, they seem to be backing off on that. I mean, the latest issue of Booster Gold that I read, they dropped the backup feature, put it back at $299. And, you know, they're going to keep the backups in some stuff, but on others they're getting rid of it, and I think that makes sense.
Well, as they back off on that, then it's interesting because, you know, Marvel is sort of, I don't know how long it's going to last, but, you know, like the solicits that are coming out for April, the Amazing Spider-Man titles have got essentially a, you know, kind of backup second feature that ties in with somehow the main storyline, but all the weekly Amazing Spider-Man titles are going to $3.99 with the extra backup material in it.
That seems like a really risky move, because that's doing below 60,000, really, it's bouncing quite a bit. Issue 620 did 59,860. Issue 21 did 55,350, which is a drop of 4,510. And then the next one dropped by another 1,421 to 53,929. The average is 56,380, and you add a dollar price tag to those. Actually, 620 was a dollar more, and that was the one that, I don't know, that just seems...
They had been running, like, maybe one book a month at the higher price.
Yeah.
But now when they're, like, popping all of them up to there, I'm just wondering if that's not going to take a certain number of people and just push them over the edge and have them say, you know what, I'm just not going to get Amazing Spider-Man anymore.
Well, I think some of these people might have been pushing it to get 3 titles or 3 issues a month on that. Now you're essentially saying, we want you to pay for a fourth.
Right.
Yeah, I totally think that's going to push some people away.
It's going from $9 or $10 a month to $12 a month. And it's like, you know, when does it become, you know, how much a month am I want to spend on this one title?
Yeah, yeah. It's just foolish when they do stuff like that. But that's what they're going to do.
See them. They're experimenting with it, you know, and that's the kind of thing where mixed feelings about that. You almost hope that that experiment crashes and burns, because if it works, they're going to be doing it all over the place, you know.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, I am actually quite happy that, you know, a year ago, or was it even a little more than a year ago, we were all predicting, you know, how long it would be before the average book was $3.99, because they were experimenting with that $3.99 price point, and lots of people were, you know, that the big books, they were still selling at that $3.99 price point without significant drop off. But, you know, I don't think that was a rousing success, and they've been backing off of that, which is a good thing as far as I'm concerned, you know.
Well, again, we're seeing the $3.99 books doing okay, but we're also seeing a lot of other books that are well below the 10,000 mark. Again, The Shield, The Great Ten, The Web, and if you know, Magog, Warlord and stuff over at DC, and I gotta wonder if their other books weren't $3.99, could people, you know, squeeze in a couple of bucks for some of these? It's interesting because we've got only five more books at the $2.99 price point than the $3.99 price point this month. But, you know, it does seem to be that we've pretty much hit that point where, yeah, this price hike isn't working. You know, pretty much in the past, they've been able to raise prices without too much of a sales backlash. But I think this time, you know, they're starting to feel it.
The ones that seem to be sticking at $3.99, at least, you know, to the point of the, you know, extra material, whether it's backup or just longer issues like Blackest Night, most of them, they seem to have more than 22 pages of content. So, you know, that whole 22 pages for $3.99, you know, raising the price without raising the amount that you get, that doesn't seem to have taken much at all,
Yeah.
thankfully.
Yeah, I'm okay with that too. I think $3.99 is too expensive for a 22-page comic. Yeah, now if I felt I got a lot of story in those 22 pages, I might be more okay with it, but you know, you factor in the decompression and some stuff like that, and it's not a good situation.
I just think it was a little bit too aggressive of a jump. You know, if they had gone to, you know, 3.25 or 3.50, it probably would have slipped under the radar a little bit better.
Oh yeah, I think 350 would have been the next logical choice. I think 325 would have been the smarter one, because then you could still get, you know, three comics for under $10, whatever.
I mean, they could have done 3.25 a year and a half ago, and at this point, we'd all be pretty much used to just sucking it up, and they could be ratcheting it up to 3.50 now.
Yeah.
You know, it's just they went for the gusto too fast, I think, on that. And
Well, I think that was the biggest price hike we'd ever seen. Because it was, I mean, we went from 75 cents to a dollar way back when. That was, you know, a big hit, but
but it was only a quarter, you know, it's the same thing, percentage-wise.
well, it was exactly a third of what the price had
Yeah,
been. This
right.
technically is slightly over a third of what the price had been. Because, you know, again, we've got, you know, $2.99, a third of that would have been just under a dollar. They went for that full dollar. Granted, I don't think, you know, $3.98 would have been any better, but it was too big of a price too quick, and I think you're right. If they'd gone 325, then inched that up to 350, then inched that up to 375, or what have you, over time, that would have at least let people adjust versus having to either shift or cut titles. So, anything else? Does that pretty much do it?
I think that does it for us.
Cool. The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. The sales estimates can be found under the sales chart section of the Comic Book Page website. Please email us at themailreport@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening. The views expressed by Don Mayo and his guests are their own and may or may not accurately reflect reality in any way, shape, or form. If they differ from your reality, please verify you are in the same space-time continuum before taking any action. All numbers given are estimates and only estimates. To think otherwise would be foolish. The estimates given are for sales from publishers to retailers for items invoiced through Diamond Comics Distribution for the month in question. The Diamond Order Index only goes two decimal places, and therefore there is a margin of error of at least 1/10,000th of the estimate for the key title, which is usually, but not always, Batman. For months in which no issue of Batman shipped, Detective Comics is usually used as the key title. Some numbers are rounded to the nearest 100 for convenience. This may introduce a further level of inaccuracy. No information about how many copies may or may not have sold to readers is included, implied, or denied.
Anywhere from all of the units shipped to retailers to none of them could still be sitting on store shelves gathering dust. All reorder activity should be seen only as indications there's at least one retailer that may have an excessive amount of empty shelf space with dust it needs collecting. The list of the top 300 comic books only contains the top 300 comic books sold through Diamond to retailers for the month in question. More than 300 different comic books may have shipped during the month, and obviously not all of them will be included on the list of top 300 comic books for the month. The list of the top 100 graphic novels and collected editions only contains the top 100 graphic novels and collected editions sold through Diamond to retailers for the month in question. More than 100 different graphic novels and collected editions may have shipped during the month, and obviously not all of them will be included on the list of top 100 graphic novels and collected editions for the month. In the past, list of top graphic novels and collected editions contained only 50.5 or excuse 10 items. This means that historical data about graphic novels and collected editions is increasingly limited the further back in time that you look. Fixing this may require time travel, which as far as I know now, has not been successfully invented in the past, present, or any possible or probable future. No visibility into the sales or lack of sales, any comic books, graphic novels, and or collected editions that are not listed on the top 300 comic books or top 100 graphic novels and collected editions lists is included, implied, or denied. The data from Diamond only contains data from Diamond. No information about sales or lack of sales of any items sold outside the Diamond Comics distribution channel is included, implied, or denied. That information is considered to be outside the scope of this report. If this isn't the data you're looking for, then this isn't the data you're looking for, and no amount of whining will change that. If you don't know why this disclaimer is here, then it probably isn't meant for you. This report is voiding the ultimate reality of Duluth, Minnesota. Math, logic, and the English language itself seem to work very differently there.